Wipe your nose. I looked again at the honey jars, at the amber light swimming inside them, and made myself breathe slowly. I realized it for the first time in my life. There is nothing but mystery in the world. How it hides behind the fabric of our poor browbeat days, shining brightly, and we don't even know it. I thought about the bees that had come to my room at night, how they'd been part of it all. And the voice I'd heard the day before, saying, "Lily Melissa Owens, your jar is open." Speaking as plain and clear as the woman in navy speaking to her daughter. "Here's your Coca-Colas," the bow-tied man was saying. I pointed to the honey jars. "Where did you get those?" He thought the tone of shock in my voice was really consternation. "I know what you mean. A lot of folks won't buy it 'cause it's got the Virgin Mary pictured as a colored woman. But see, that's because the woman who makes the honey is colored herself." "What's her name?" "August Boatwright," he said. "She keeps bees all over the county." "Keep breathing. Keep breathing. Do you know where she lives?" "Oh, sure. It's the darndest house you ever saw. Painted like Pepto-Bismol. Your grandmother surely seen it. You go through town on Main Street till it turns into the highway to Florence." I walked to the door. "Thanks." "You tell your grandma hello for me," he said. Rosaline's snores were making the bench slats tremble. I gave her a shake. "Wake up. Here's your snuff, but put it in your pocket, 'cause I didn't exactly pay for it."
"You stole it?"
she said. "I had to, 'cause they don't sell items from the store on Sunday."
"Your life has gone straight to hell," she said.
I spread our lunch out like a picnic on the bench, but couldn't eat a bite of it till I told her about the Black Mary on the honey jar and the beekeeper named August Boatwright. "Don't you think my mother must have known her?" I said. "It couldn't be just a coincidence." She didn't answer, so I said louder, "Rosaline, don't you think so?"
"I don't know what I think," she said. "I don't want you getting your hopes up too much, is all."
She reached over and touched my cheek.
"Oh, Lily, what have we gone and done?"
Tiburon was a place like Sylvan. Minus the peaches. In front of the domed courthouse, someone had stuck a Confederate flag in the mouth of their public cannon. South Carolina was Dixie first, America second. You couldn't get the pride of Fort Sumter out of us if you tried. Strolling down Main Street, we moved through long blue shadows cast from the two-story buildings that ran the length of the street. At a drugstore, I peered through the plate glass at a soda fountain with chrome trim, where they sold cherry cokes and banana splits, thinking that soon it would not be just for white people anymore. We walked past Worth Insurance Agency, Tiburon County Rural Electric Office, and the Amen Dollar Store, which had hula hoop swim goggles and boxes of sparklers in the window, with "Summer Fun" spray-painted across the glass. A few places, like the Farmers Trust Bank, had "Gold Water for President" signs in their windows, sometimes with a bumper sticker across the bottom saying, "Affirmation Vietnam." At the Tiburon post office, I left Rosaline on the sidewalk and stepped inside to where the post office boxes and the Sunday newspapers were kept. As far as I could tell, there were no wanted posters in there of me and Rosaline, and the front page headline in the Columbia paper was about Castro's sister spying for the CIA, and not a word about a white girl breaking a Negro woman out of jail in Sylvan. I dropped a dime into the slot and took one of the papers, wondering if the story was inside somewhere. Rosaline and I squatted on the ground in an alley and spread out the paper, opening every page. It was full of Malcolm X, Saigon, the Beatles, tennis at Wimbledon, and a motel in Jackson, Mississippi that closed down rather than accept Negro guests, but nothing about me and Rosaline. Sometimes you want to fall on your knees and thank God in heaven for all the poor news reporting that goes on in the world. Honeybees are social insects and live in colonies. Each colony is a family unit, comprising a single egg-laying female, or queen, and her many sterile daughters, called workers. The workers cooperate in the food gathering, nest building, and rearing the offspring. Males are reared only at the times of year when their presence is required. Bees of the World. Chapter 4 The woman moved along a row of white boxes that bordered the woods beside the pink house. A house so pink, it remained a scorched shock on the back of my eyelids after I looked away. She was tall, dressed in white, wearing a pith helmet with veils that floated across her face, settled around her shoulders, and trailed down her back. She looked like an African bride. Lifting the tops off the boxes, she peered inside, swinging a tin bucket of smoke back and forth. Clouds of bees rose up and flew wreaths around her head. Twice she disappeared in the fogged billows, then gradually reemerged like a dream rising up from the bottom of the night. We stood across the road, Rosaline and I, temporarily mute. Me out of awe for the mystery playing out, and Rosaline because her lips were sealed with red rose snuff.
"She's the woman who makes the Black Madonna honey," I said. I was unable to take my eyes off her, the mistress of bees, the portal into my mother's life. August. Rosaline, wilting, spit a stream of black juice, then wiped away the mustache of perspiration above her lip.
"I hope she makes honey better than she picks out paint."
"I like it," I announced. We waited till she went inside, then crossed the highway and opened the gate in the picket fence that was about to topple over from the weight of Carolina jasmine. Add that to all the chive, dillweed, and lemon balm growing around the porch, and the smell could knock you over. We stood on the porch in the pink light shining off the house. June bugs flickered all around, and music notes floated from inside, sounding like a violin, only a lot sadder. My heart kicked in. I asked Rosaline if she could hear it beating. It was that loud.
"I don't hear nothing but the good Lord asking me what I'm doing here."
She spit what I hoped was the last of her snuff. I knocked on the door while she muttered a slew of words under her breath.
"Give me strength, baby Jesus. I'm lost off feeble minds."
The music stopped. In the corner of my eye, I caught a slight movement at the window. A Venetian blind slid open, then closed. When the door opened, it was not the woman in white, but another one, wearing red. Her hair cut so short, it resembled a little gray curlicue swim cap pulled tight over her scalp. Her face stared at us, suspicious and stern. I noticed she carried a musical bow tucked under her arm like a riding whip. It crossed my mind she might use it on us.
"Yes?
Are you August Boatwright?"
"No, I'm June Boatwright," she said,
her eyes sweeping over the stitches on Rosaline's forehead.
"August Boatwright is my sister. You came to see her?"
I nodded, and simultaneously another woman appeared, with bare feet. She wore a green and white sleeveless gingham dress and short braids that stuck straight out all over her head.
"I'm May Boatwright," she said. "I'm August's sister, too."
She smiled at us, one of those odd grins that let you know she was not an altogether normal person. I wish June with her whip would grin too, but she only looked annoyed.
"Is August expecting you?" she said, directing her words to Rosaline.
Of course, Rosaline jumped in, ready to spill the whole story.
"No. See, Lily has this picture," I broke in.
"I saw a honey jar back at the store, and the man said,
'Oh, you've come for honey. Well, why didn't you say so? Come on in the front parlor, I'll get August.'"
I shot a look at Rosaline that said, "Are you crazy? Don't tell them about the picture." We were going to have to get our story straight, that was for sure. Some people have a sixth sense, and some are duds at it. I believe I must have it, because the moment I stepped into the house, I felt a trembling along my skin, a traveling current that moved up my spine, down my arms, pulsing out from my fingertips. I was practically radiating. The body knows things a long time before the mind catches up to them. I was wondering what my body knew that I didn't. I smelled furniture wax everywhere. Somebody had gone over the entire parlor with it. A big room with fringe throw rugs, an old piano with a lace runner, and cane-bottom rockers draped with afghans.
Each chair had its own little velvet stool sitting before it.
Velvet.
I went over and rubbed my hand across one of them. Next, I walked over to a drop-leaf table and sniffed a beeswax candle that smelled precisely like the furniture wax. It sat in a star-shaped holder next to a jigsaw puzzle in progress, though I couldn't tell what picture it would make. A wide-mouthed milk bottle filled with gladiolus was perched on another table under the window. The curtains were organdy, not your average white organdy, but silver-gray, so the air came through with a slightly smoky shimmer. Imagine walls with nothing on them but mirrors. I counted 5 of them, each one with a big brass frame around it. Then I turned around and looked back toward the door where I'd come in. Over in the corner was a carving of a woman nearly 3 feet tall. She was one of those figures that had leaned out from the front of a ship in olden times, so old she could have been on the Santa Maria with Columbus for all I knew. She was black as she could be, twisted like driftwood from being out in the weather, her face a map of all the storms and journeys she'd been through. Her right arm was raised, as if she was pointing the way, except her fingers were closed in a fist. It gave her a serious look, like she could straighten you out if necessary. Even though she wasn't dressed up like Mary and didn't resemble the picture on the honey jar, I knew that's who she was. She had a faded red heart painted on her breast and a yellow crescent moon, worn down and crooked, painted where her body would have blended into the ship's wood. A candle inside a tall red glass threw glints and glimmers across her body. She was a mix of mighty and humble, all in one. I didn't know what to think, but what I felt was magnetic, and so big it ached like the moon had entered my chest and filled it up. The only thing I could compare it to was the feeling I got one time when I walked back from the peach stand and saw the sun spreading across the late afternoon, setting the top of the orchard on fire while darkness collected underneath. Silence had hovered over my head, beauty multiplying in the air. The trees so transparent I felt I could see through to something pure inside them. My chest had ached then, too. This very same way. The lips on the statue had a beautiful, bossy half-smile, the sight of which caused me to move both my hands up to my throat. Everything about that smile said, "Lily Owens, I know you down to the core." I felt she knew what a lying, murdering, hating person I really was. How I hated T-Ray and the girls at school, but mostly myself for taking away my mother. I wanted to cry, but then, in the next instant, I wanted to laugh, because the statue also made me feel like Lily the smiled upon. Like there was goodness and beauty in me, too. Like I really had all that fine potential Mrs. Henry said I did. Standing there, I loved myself, and I hated myself. That's what the Black Mary did to me, made me feel my glory and my shame at the same time. I stepped closer to her and caught the faint scent of honey coming from the wood. May walked over and stood beside me, and I could smell nothing then but the pomade on her hair, onions on her hands, vanilla on her breath. Her palms were pink, like the bottoms of her feet, her elbows darker than the rest of her, and for some reason, the sight of them filled me with tenderness. August Boatwright entered, wearing a pair of rimless glasses and a lime-green chiffon scarf tied onto her belt.
"Who've we got here?"
she said, and the sound of her voice snapped me back to my ordinary senses. She was almond buttery with sweat and sun, her face corrugated with 1,000 caramel wrinkles and her hair looking flour-dusted, but the rest of her seemed decades younger. "I'm Lily, and that's Rosaline," I said, hesitating as June appeared in the doorway behind her. I opened my mouth without any sense of what I would say next. What came out couldn't have surprised me more. "We ran away from home and don't have any place to go," I told her. "Any other day of my life, I could have won a fibbing contest hands down. And that is what I came up with, the pathetic truth. I watched their faces, especially August's. She took off her glasses and rubbed the depressions on each side of her nose. It was so quiet, I could hear a clock ticking in another room. August replaced her glasses, walked to Rosaline, and examined the stitches on her forehead, the cut under her eye, the bruises along her temple and arms.
You look like you've been beaten.
She fell down the front steps when we were leaving, I offered, returning to my natural fibbing habit. August and June traded looks while Rosaline narrowed her eyes, letting me know I'd done it again, speaking for her like she wasn't even there.
Well, you can stay here till you figure out what to do. We can't have you living on the side of the road, said August.
The intake of June's breath nearly sucked the air from the room.
But August, they'll stay here.
She repeated in a way that let me know who the big sister was and who the little sister was.
It'll be all right. We've got the cots in the honey house.
June flounced out, her red skirt flashing around the door. Thank you, I said to August.
You're welcome. Now sit down, I'll get some orangeade.
We got situated in the cane-bottom rockers while May stood guard, grinning her crazy woman grin. She had great big muscles in her arms, I noticed.
How come y'all have names from a calendar? Rosaline asked her.
Our mother loved spring and summer, May said. We had an April too, but she died when she was little.
May's grin dissolved, and out of nowhere she started humming, Oh, Susanna, like her life depended on it. Rosaline and I stared at her as her humming turned into hard crying. She cried like April's death had happened only this second. Finally, August returned with a tray of four jelly glasses, orange slices stuck real pretty on the rims.
Oh, May, honey, you go on out to the wall and finish your cry, she said, pointing her to the door and giving her a nudge.
August acted like this was the sort of normal behavior happening in every household in South Carolina.
Here you go, orangeade.
I sipped. Rosaline, however, downed hers so fast she let out a belch that the boys in my old junior high would have envied. It was unbelievable. August pretended she didn't hear it, while I stared at the velvet footstool and wished Rosaline could be more cultured.
So you're Lily and Rosaline, August said. Do you have last names?
Rosaline Smith and Lily Williams, I lied, and then launched in. See, my mother died when I was little, and then my father died in a tractor accident last month on our farm in Spartanburg County. I don't have any other kin around here, so they were going to send me to a home. August shook her head. Rosaline shook hers, too, but for a different reason. Rosaline was our housekeeper, I went on. She doesn't have any family but me, so we decided to go up to Virginia to find my aunt. Except we don't have any money, so if you have any work for us to do while we're here, maybe we could earn a little before heading on. We aren't really in a hurry to get to Virginia. Rosaline glared at me. For a minute there was nothing but ice clinking in our glasses. I hadn't realized how sweltering the room was, how stimulated my sweat glands had gotten. I could actually smell myself. I cut my eyes over to the Black Mary in the corner and back to August. She put down her glass. I had never seen eyes that color, eyes the purest shade of ginger.
I'm from Virginia myself, she said.
And for some reason this stirred up the current that had moved in my limbs when I'd first entered the room.
All right, then. Rosaline can help May in the house, and you can help me and Zack with the bees. Zack is my main helper, so I can't pay you anything. But at least you'll have a room and some food till we call your aunt and see about her sending some bus money.
I don't exactly know her whole name, I said. My father just called her Aunt Bernie. I never met her.
Well, what were you planning to do, child? Go door to door in Virginia?
No, ma'am, just Richmond.
I see, said August.
And the thing was, She did. She saw right through it. That afternoon, heat built up in the skies over Tiburon. Finally, it gave way to a thunderstorm. August, Rosaline, and I stood on the screen porch that jutted off the back of the kitchen and watched the clouds bruise dark purple over the treetops and the wind whip the branches. We were waiting for a let-up so August could show us our new quarters in the honey house, a converted garage in the back corner of the yard painted the same hot flamingo shade as the rest of the house. Now and then, sprays of rain flew over and misted our faces. Every time, I refused to wipe away the wetness. It made the world seem so alive to me. I couldn't help but envy the way a good storm got everyone's attention. August went back into the kitchen and returned with 3 aluminum pie pans and handed them out.
Come on, let's make a run for it. These will keep our heads dry at least.
August and I dashed into the downpour, holding the pans over our heads. Glancing back, I saw Rosaline holding the pie pan in her hand, missing the whole point. When August and I reached the honey house, we had to huddle in the door and wait on her. Rosaline glided along, gathering rain in the pan and flinging it out like a child would do. She walked on puddles like they were Persian carpets, and when a clap of thunder boomed around us, she looked up at the drowned sky, opened her mouth, and let the rain fall in. Ever since those men had beaten her, her face had been so pinched and tired, her eyes dull like they'd had the light knocked out of them. Now I could see she was returning to herself, looking like an all-weather queen out there, like nothing could touch her. If only she could get some manners. The inside of the honey house was one big room, filled with strange honey-making machines, big tanks, gas burners, troughs, levers, white boxes, and racks piled with waxy honeycombs. My nostrils nearly drowned in the scent of sweetness. Rosaline made gigantic puddles on the floor while August ran for towels. I stared at a side wall that was covered with shelves of mason jars. Pith helmets with netting, tools, and wax candles hung from nails near the front door, and a thin veneer of honey lay across everything. The soles of my shoes stuck slightly as I walked. August led us to a tiny corner room in the back with a sink, a full-length mirror, one curtainless window, and 2 wooden cots made up with clean white sheets. I placed my bag on the first cot. "May and I sleep out here sometimes when we're harvesting honey round the clock," August said. "It can get hot, so you'll need to turn the fan on." Rosaline reached up to where it sat on a shelf along the back wall and flipped the switch, causing cobwebs to blow off the blades and fly all over the room. She had to pick them off her cheekbones.
"You need dry clothes," August told her.
"I'll air dry,"
Rosaline said, and she stretched out on the cot, making the legs on it bow.
"You'll have to come into the house to use the bathroom," August said. "We don't lock the door, so just come on in."
Rosaline's eyes were closed. She had already drifted off and was making little puff noises with her mouth. August lowered her voice.
"So, she fell down the steps?"
"Yes, ma'am. She went down head first, caught her foot in the rug at the top of the stairs, the one my mother hooked herself." The secret of a good lie is don't overly explain and throw in one good detail.
"Well, Miss Williams, you can start work tomorrow," she said. I stood there wondering who she was talking to. Who was Miss Williams? When I remembered, I was Lily Williams now. That's the other secret to lying. You have to keep your story straight. "Zach will be away for a week," she was saying. "His family has gone down to Polly's Island to visit his mama's sister."
"If you don't mind me asking, what will I be doing?"
"You'll work with Zach and me, making the honey, doing whatever needs doing. Come on, I'll give you the tour."
We walked back to the large room with all the machines. She led me to a column of white boxes stacked one on top of the other. These are called supers, she said, setting one on the floor in front of me and removing the lid. From the outside, it looked like a regular old drawer pulled out of the dresser, but inside it were frames of honeycomb hung in a neat row. Each frame was filled with honey and sealed over with beeswax. She pointed her finger. That's the uncapper over there, where we take the wax off the comb. Then it goes through the wax melter over here. I followed her, stepping over bits and pieces of honeycomb, which is what they had instead of dust bunnies. She stopped at the big metal tank in the center of the room. This is the spinner, she said, patting the side like it was a good dog. Go on up there and look in. I climbed up the two-step ladder and peered over the edge while August flipped a switch and an old motor on the floor sputtered and cranked. The spinner started slowly, gaining speed like the cotton candy machine at the fair until it was sending heavenly smells into the atmosphere. It separates out the honey, she said. Takes out the bad stuff, leaves in the good. I've always thought how nice it would be to have spinners like this for human beings. Just toss them in and let the spinner do its work. I looked back at her, and she was staring at me with her ginger cake eyes. Was I paranoid to think that when she'd said human beings, what she really meant was me? She turned off the motor, and the humming stopped with a series of ticking sounds. Bending over the brown tube leading from the spinner, she said, From here, it goes into the baffle tank, then over to the warming pan, and finally into the settling tank. That's the honey gate, where we fill the buckets. You'll get the hang of it. I doubted it. I'd never seen such a complex situation in my life. Well, I imagine you'll want to rest up like Rosaline. Supper is at 6. You like sweet potato biscuits? That's May's specialty. When she left, I lay on the empty cot while rain crashed on the tin roof. I felt like I'd been traveling for weeks, like I'd been dodging lions and tigers on a safari through the jungle, trying to get to the lost diamond city buried in the Congo, which happened to be the theme of the last matinee I'd seen in Sylvan before leaving. I felt that somehow I belonged here. I really did. But I could have been in the Congo for how unfamiliar it felt. Staying in a colored house, with colored women, eating off their dishes, lying on their sheets, it was not something I was against, but I was brand new to it, and my skin had never felt so white to me. T-Ray did not think colored women were smart. Since I want to tell the whole truth, which means the worst parts, I thought they could be smart, but not as smart as me being white. Lying on the cot in the honey house, though, all I could think was, August is so intelligent, so cultured, and I was surprised by this. That's what let me know I had some prejudice buried inside me. When Rosaline woke from her nap, before she had a chance to raise her head off the pillow, I said, Do you like it here?
I guess I do, she said, working to get herself to a sitting position. So far.
Well, I like it too, I said, so I don't want you saying anything to mess it up, okay? She crossed her arms over her belly and frowned.
Like what?
Don't say anything about the Black Mary picture I got in my bag, okay? And don't mention my mother. She reached up and started twisting some of her loose braids back together.
Now, how come you want to keep that a secret?
I hadn't had time to sort out my reasons. I wanted to say, because I just want to be normal for a little while. Not a refugee girl looking for her mother, but a regular girl paying a summer visit to Tiburon, South Carolina. I want time to win August over, so she won't send me back when she finds out what I've done. And those things were true. But even as they crossed my mind, I knew they didn't completely explain why talking to August about my mother made me so uneasy. I went over and began helping Rosaline with her braids. My hands, I noticed, were shaking a little. Just tell me you aren't going to say anything, I said.
It's your secret, she said.
You do what you want with it.
The next morning I woke early and walked outside. The rain had stopped, and the sun glowed behind a bank of clouds. Pine woods stretched beyond the honey house in every direction. I could make out about 14 beehives tucked under the trees in the distance, the tops of them postage stamps of white shine. The night before, during dinner, August had said she owned 28 acres left to her by her granddaddy. A girl could get lost on 28 acres in a little town like this. She could open a trap door and disappear. Light spilled through a crack in a red-rimmed cloud, and I walked toward it along a path that led from the honey house into the woods. I passed a child's wagon loaded with garden tools. It rested beside a plot growing tomatoes tied to wooden stakes with pieces of nylon hose. Mixed in with them were orange zinnias and lavender gladiolus that dipped toward the ground. The sisters loved birds, I could see. There was a concrete birdbath and tons of feeders, hollowed-out gourds and rows of big pine cones sitting everywhere, each one smeared with peanut butter. Where the grass gave way to the woods, I found a stone wall crudely cemented together, not even knee-high, but nearly 50 yards long. It curved on around the property and abruptly stopped. It didn't seem to have any purpose to it. Then I noticed tiny pieces of folded-up paper stuck in the crevices around the stones. I walked the length of the fence, and it was the same all the way, hundreds of these bits of paper. I pulled one out and opened it, but the writing was too blurred from rain to make out. I dug out another one. Birmingham, September 15. 4 little angels dead. I folded it and put it back, feeling like I'd done something wrong. Stepping over the wall, I moved into the trees, picking my way through little ferns with their blue-green feathers, careful not to tear the designs the spiders had worked so hard on all morning. It was like me and Rosaline really had discovered the lost Diamond City. As I walked, I began to hear the sound of running water. It's impossible to hear that sound and not go searching for the source. I pushed deeper into the woods. The growth turned thick, and sticker bushes snagged my legs, but I found it. A little river, not much bigger than the creek where Rosaline and I had bathed. I watched the currents meander, the lazy ripples that once in a while broke along the surface. Taking off my shoes, I waded in. The bottom turned mushy, squishing up through my toes. A turtle plopped off a rock into the water right in front of me, nearly scaring the Lord Jesus out of me. There was no telling what other invisible creatures I was out here socializing with. Snakes, frogs, fish, a whole river world of biting bugs, and I could have cared less. When I put on my shoes and headed back, the light poured down in shafts, and I wanted it to always be like this. No T-Ray, no Mr. Gaston, nobody wanting to beat Rosaline senseless, just the rain-clean woods and the rising light. Let's imagine for a moment that we are tiny enough to follow a bee into a hive. Usually the first thing we would have to get used to is the darkness. Exploring the world of social insects. Chapter 5. The first week in August was a consolation, a pure relief. The world will give you that once in a while, a brief time out. The boxing bell rings and you go to your corner, where somebody dabs mercy on your beat-up life. All that week no one brought up my father, supposedly dead in a tractor accident, or my long-lost Aunt Bernie in Virginia. The Callender sisters just took us in. The first thing they did was take care of Rosaline's clothes. August got into her truck and went straight to the Amen Dollar Store, where she bought Rosaline 4 pairs of panties, a pale blue cotton nightgown, 3 waistless Hawaiian-looking dresses, and a bra that could have slung boulders.
"This ain't charity," said Rosaline when August spread them across the kitchen table. "I'll pay it all back."
"You can work it off," said August. May came in with witch hazel and cotton balls and began to clean up Rosaline's stitches.
"Somebody knocked the daylights out of you," she said,
and a moment later she was humming Oh, Susanna at that same frantic speed she'd hummed it before. June jerked her head up from the table where she was inspecting the purchases.
You're humming that song again, she said to May. Why don't you excuse yourself?
May dropped her cotton ball on the table and left the room. I looked at Rosaline and she shrugged. June finished cleaning the stitches herself. It was distasteful to her, I could tell by the way she held her mouth, how it drew into a tight buttonhole. I slipped out to find May. I was going to say, I'll sing Oh Susanna with you start to finish, but I couldn't find her. It was May who taught me the honey song. Place a beehive on my grave and let the honey soak through. When I'm dead and gone, that's what I want from you. The streets of heaven are golden sunny, but I'll stick with my plot and my pot of honey. Place a beehive on my grave and let the honey soak through. I loved the silliness of it. Singing made me feel like a regular person again. May sang the song in the kitchen when she rolled dough or sliced tomatoes, and August hummed it when she pasted labels on the honey jars. It said everything about living here. We lived for honey. We swallowed a spoonful in the morning to wake us up, and one at night to put us to sleep. We took it with every meal to calm the mind, give us stamina, and prevent fatal disease. We swabbed ourselves in it to disinfect cuts or heal chapped lips. It went in our baths, our skin cream, our raspberry tea and biscuits. Nothing was safe from honey. In 1 week, my skinny arms and legs began to plump out, and the frizz in my hair turned to silken waves. August said honey was the ambrosia of the gods and the shampoo of the goddesses. I spent my time in the honey house with August while Rosaline helped May around the house. I learned how to run a steam-heated knife along the super, slicing the wax cap off the combs, how to load them just so into the spinner. I adjusted the flame under the steam generator and changed the nylon stockings August used to filter the honey in the settling tank. I caught on so fast, she said I was a marvel. Those were her very words. Lily, you are a marvel. My favorite thing was pouring beeswax into the candle molds. August used a pound of wax per candle and pressed tiny violets into them, which I collected in the woods. She had a mail-order business to stores in places as far away as Maine and Vermont. People up there bought so many of her candles and jars of honey, she couldn't keep up with it, and there were tins of Black Madonna all-purpose beeswax for her special customers. August said it could make your fishing line float, your button thread stronger, your furniture shinier, your stuck window glide, and your irritated skin glow like a baby's bottom. Beeswax was a miracle cure for everything. May and Rosaline hit it off right away. May was simple-minded. I don't mean retarded because she was smart in some ways and read cookbooks nonstop. I mean she was naive and unassuming, a grown-up and a child at the same time. Plus, she was a touch crazy. Rosaline liked to say May was a bona fide candidate for the nut house, but she still took to her. I would come into the kitchen and they would be standing shoulder to shoulder at the sink, holding ears of corn they couldn't get shucked for talking, or they'd be dabbing pine cones with peanut butter for the birds. It was Rosaline who figured out the mystery of Oh Susanna. She said if you kept things on a happy note, May did fine, but bring up an unpleasant subject, like Rosaline's head full of stitches or the tomatoes having rot bottom, and May would start humming Oh Susanna. It seemed to be her personal way of warding off crying. It worked for things like tomato rot, but not for much else. A few times she cried so bad, ranting and tearing her hair, that Rosaline had to come get August from the honey house. August would calmly send May out back to the stone wall. Going out there was about the only thing that could bring her around. May didn't allow rat traps in the house, as she couldn't even bear the thought of a suffering rat. But what really drove Rosaline crazy was May catching spiders and carrying them out of the house in the dustpan. I liked this about May, since it reminded me of my bug-loving mother. I went around helping May catch Granddaddy Longlegs,
Not just because a smashed bug could send her over the edge, but because I felt I was being loyal to my mother's wishes. May had to have a banana every morning, and this banana absolutely could not have a bruise on it. One morning I watched her peel 7 bananas in a row before she found one without a bad place. She kept tons of bananas around the kitchen, stoneware bowls chock full. Next to honey, they were the most plentiful thing in the house. May could go through 5 or more every morning, looking for the ideal, flawless banana, the one that hadn't got banged up by the grocery world. Rosaline made banana pudding, banana cream pie, banana jello, and banana slices on lettuce leaf till August told her it was all right, just throw the bloomin' things away. The one it was hard to get a fix on was June. She taught history and English at the colored high school. But what she really loved was music. If I got finished early in the honey house, I went to the kitchen and watched May and Rosaline cook, but really I was there to listen to June play the cello. She played music for dying people, going to their homes and even to the hospital to serenade them into the next life. I had never heard of such a thing, and I would sit at the table drinking sweet-ass tea, wondering if this was the reason June smiled so little. Maybe she was around death too much. I could tell she was still bristled at the idea of me and Rosaline staying. It was the one sore point about our being here. I overheard her talking to August one night on the back porch as I was coming across the yard to go to the bathroom in the pink house. Their voices stopped me beside the hydrangea bush.
"You know she's lying," said June.
"I know," August told her. "But they're in some kind of trouble and need a place to stay. Who's gonna take them in if we don't? A white girl and a Negro woman? Nobody around here." For a second, neither spoke. I heard the moths landing against the porch light bulb. June said,
"We can't keep a runaway girl here without letting somebody know."
August turned toward the screen and looked out, causing me to step deeper into the shadows and press my back against the house.
"Let who know?" she said. "The police? They would only haul her off someplace. Maybe her father really did die. If so, who better is she gonna stay with for the time being than us?"
"What about this aunt she mentioned?"
"There's no aunt, and you know it," said August.
June's voice sounded exasperated.
"What if her father didn't die in this so-called tractor accident? Won't he be looking for her?"
A pause followed. I crept closer to the edge of the porch.
"I just have a feeling about this, June. Something tells me not to send her back to some place she doesn't want to be. Not yet, at least. She has some reason for leaving. Maybe he mistreated her. I believe we can help her."
"Why don't you just ask her point blank what kind of trouble she's in?"
"Everything in time," August said. "The last thing I want is to scare her off with a lot of questions. She'll tell us when she's ready. Let's be patient."
"But she's white, August."
This was a great revelation. Not that I was white, but that it seemed like June might not want me here because of my skin color. I hadn't known this was possible. To reject people for being white. A hot wave passed through my body. Righteous indignation is what Brother Gerald called it. Jesus had righteous indignation when he turned over the tables in the temple and drove out the thieving money changers. I wanted to march up there, flip a couple of tables over, and say, "Excuse me, June Boatwright, but you don't even know me. Let's see if we can help her," August said as June disappeared from my line of sight. "We owe her that."
"I don't see that we owe her anything," June said.
A door slammed. August flipped off the light and let out a sigh that floated into the darkness. I walked back toward the honey house, feeling ashamed that August had seen through my hoax, but relieved, too, that she wasn't planning on calling the police or sending me back. Yet. Yet, she'd said. Mostly I felt resentment at June's attitude. As I squatted on the grass at the edge of the woods, the pea felt hot between my legs,
I watched it puddle in the dirt, the smell of it rising into the night. There was no difference between my piss and June's. That's what I thought when I looked at the dark circle on the ground. Piss was piss. Every evening after supper, we sat in their tiny den around the television set with the ceramic bee planter on top. You could hardly see the screen for the philodendron vines that dangled around the news pictures. I liked the way Walter Cronkite looked, with his black glasses and his voice that knew everything worth knowing. Here was a man who was not against books. That was plain. Take everything T-Ray was not, shape it into a person, and you would get Walter Cronkite. He filled us in on an integration parade in St. Augustine that got attacked by a mob of white people, about white vigilante groups, fire hoses, and tear gas. We got all the totals. 3 civil rights workers killed. 2 bomb blasts. 3 Negro students chased with axe handles. Since Mr. Johnson signed that law, it was like somebody had ripped the side seams out of American life. We watched the lineup of governors coming on the TV screen asking for calm and reason. August said she was afraid it was only a matter of time before we saw things like that happen right here in Tiburon. I felt white and self-conscious sitting there, especially with June in the room. Self-conscious and ashamed. Usually May didn't watch, but one night she joined us, and midway through she started to hum "Oh, Susanna." She was upset over a Negro man named Mr. Raines, who was killed by a shotgun from a passing car in Georgia. They showed a picture of his widow, holding her children, and suddenly May started to sob. Of course, everybody jumped up like she was an unpinned grenade and tried to quiet her, but it was too late. May rocked back and forth, slapping her arms and scratching at her face. She tore open her blouse so the pale yellow buttons went flying like popped corn. I had never seen her like this, and it frightened me. August and June each took one of May's elbows and guided her through the door in a movement so smooth it was plain they'd done it before. A few moments later I heard water filling the claw-footed tub where twice I'd bathed in honey water. One of the sisters had put a pair of red socks on 2 of the tub's feet. Who knows why? I supposed it was May, who didn't need a reason. Rosaline and I crept to the door of the bathroom. It was cracked open enough for us to see May sitting in the tub in a little cloud of steam, hugging her knees. June scooped up handfuls of water and drizzled them slowly across May's back. Her crying had eased off now into sniffling. August's voice came from behind the door. "That's right, May. Let all that misery slide right off you. Just let it go." Each night after the news, we all knelt down on the rug in the parlor before Black Mary and said prayers to her, or rather the 3 sisters and I knelt, and Rosaline sat on a chair. August, June, and May called the statue Our Lady of Chains for no reason that I could see. "Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women." The sisters held strands of wooden beads and moved them in their fingers. In the beginning, Rosaline refused to join in, but soon she was going right along with the rest of us. I had the words memorized after the first evening. That's because we said the same thing over and over till it went on repeating itself in my head long after I stopped mouthing it. It was some kind of Catholic saying, but when I asked August if they were Catholic, she said, "Well, yes and no. My mother was a good Catholic. She went to Mass twice a week at St. Mary's in Richmond, but my father was an Orthodox eclectic." I had no idea what sort of denomination Orthodox eclectic was, but I nodded like we had a big group of them back in Sylvan. She said, "May and June and I take our mother's Catholicism and mix in our own ingredients. I'm not sure what you call it, but it suits us." When we finished saying Hail Mary about 300 times, we said our personal prayers silently, which was kept to a minimum, since our knees would be killing us by then. I shouldn't complain, since it was nothing compared to kneeling on the Martha Whites. Finally, the sisters would cross themselves from their foreheads to their navels, and it would be over. One evening, after they'd crossed themselves and everyone had left the room but me and August, she said, "Lily,
If you ask Mary's help, she'll give it. I didn't know what to say to that, so I shrugged. She motioned me to sit next to her in the rocking chair.
I want to tell you a story, she said.
It's a story our mother used to tell us when we got tired of our chores or out of sorts with our lives.
I'm not tired of my chores, I said.
I know, but it's a good story, just listen. I situated myself in the chair and rocked back and forth, listening to the creaking sounds that rocking chairs are famous for. A long time ago, across the world in Germany, there was a young nun named Beatrix who loved Mary. She got sick and tired of being a nun, though, what with all the chores she had to do and the rules she had to go by. So one night when it got too much for her, she took off her nun outfit, folded it up, and laid it on her bed. Then she crawled out the convent window and ran away. Okay, I could see where we were headed. She thought she was in for a wonderful time, August said. But life wasn't what she thought it'd be for a runaway nun. She roamed around feeling lost, begging in the streets. After a while, she wished she could return to the convent, but she knew they'd never take her back. We weren't talking about Beatrix the nun. That was plain as day. We were talking about me. What happened to her? I asked, trying to sound interested. Well, one day, after years of wandering and suffering, she disguised herself and went back to her old convent, wanting to visit one last time. She went into the chapel and asked one of her old sisters, "Do you remember the nun, Beatrix, who ran away?" "What do you mean?" the sister said. "The nun Beatrix didn't run away. Why, there she is over near the altar, sweeping." Well, you can imagine how this floored the real Beatrix. She marched over to the sweeping woman to get a look at her, and discovered it was none other than Mary. Mary smiled at Beatrix, then led her back to her room and gave her back her nun outfit. You see, Lily, all that time, Mary had been standing in for her. The creaking in my rocker died away as I slowed to a stop. Just what was August trying to say? That Mary would stand in for me back home in Sylvan so T-Ray wouldn't notice I was gone? That was too outlandish, even for the Catholics. I think she was telling me, "I know you've run away. Everybody gets the urge to do that sometime. But sooner or later, you'll want to go home. Just ask Mary for help." I excused myself, glad to be out of the spotlight. After that, I started asking Mary for her special help. Not to take me home, though, like the poor nun Beatrix. No, I asked her to see to it that I never went back. I asked her to draw a curtain around the pink house so no one would ever find us. I asked this daily, and I sure couldn't get over that it seemed to be working. No one knocked on the door and dragged us off to jail. Mary had made us a curtain of protection. On our first Friday evening there, after prayers were finished and orange and pink swirls still hung in the sky from sunset, I went with August to the bee yard. I hadn't been out to the hives before, so to start off she gave me a lesson in what she called bee yard etiquette. She reminded me that the world was really one big bee yard, and the same rules worked fine in both places. Don't be afraid, as no life-loving bee wants to sting you. Still, don't be an idiot. Wear long sleeves and long pants. Don't swat. Don't even think about swatting. If you feel angry, whistle. Anger agitates, while whistling melts a bee's temper. Act like you know what you're doing, even if you don't. Above all, send the bees love. Every little thing wants to be loved. August had been stung so many times she had immunity. They barely hurt her. In fact, she said, stings helped her arthritis, but since I didn't have arthritis, I should cover up. She made me put on one of her long-sleeved white shirts, then placed one of the white helmets on my head and adjusted the netting. If this was a man's world, a veil took the rough beard right off it. Everything appeared softer, nicer.
When I walked behind August in my bee veil, I felt like a moon floating behind a night cloud. She kept 48 hives strewn through the woods around the pink house, and another 280 were parceled out on various farms, in river yards and upland swamps. The farmers loved her bees, thanks to all the pollinating they did, how they made the watermelons redder and the cucumbers bigger. They would have welcomed her bees for free, but August paid every one of them with 5 gallons of honey. She was constantly checking on her hives, driving her old flatbed truck from one end of the county to the other. The honey wagon was what she called it. Bee patrol was what she did in it. I watched her load the red wagon, the one I'd seen in the backyard, with brood frames, those little slats that slip down in the hives for the bees to deposit honey on. We have to make sure the queen has plenty of room to lay her eggs, or else we'll get a swarm, she said. What does that mean, a swarm? Well, if you have a queen and a group of independent-minded bees that split off from the rest of the hive and look for another place to live, then you've got a swarm. They usually cluster on a limb somewhere. It was clear she didn't like swarms. So, she said, getting down to business, what we have to do is take out the frames filled with honey and put in empty ones. August pulled the wagon while I walked behind it carrying the smoker stuffed with pine straw and tobacco leaves. Zack had placed a brick on top of each hive telling August what to do. If the brick was at the front, it meant the colony had nearly filled the combs and needed another super. If the brick was at the back, there were problems like wax moths or ailing queens. Turned on its side, the brick announced a happy bee family. No Aussie, just Harriet and her 10,000 daughters. August struck a match and lit the grass in the smoker. I watched her face flare with light, then recede into the dimness. She waved the bucket, sending smoke into the hive. The smoke, she said, worked better than a sedative. Still, when August removed the lids, the bees poured out in thick black ropes, breaking into strands, a flurry of tiny wings moving around our faces. The air rained bees, and I sent them love, just like August said. She pulled out a brood frame, a canvas of whirling blacks and grays with rubbings of silver. There she is, Lily. See ya? Said August. That's the queen, the large one. I made a curtsy like people do for the Queen of England, which made August laugh. I wanted to make her love me so she would keep me forever. If I could make her love me, maybe she would forget about Beatrix the nun going home and let me stay. When we walked back to the house, darkness had settled in and fireflies sparked around our shoulders. I could see Rosaline and May through the kitchen window finishing the dishes. August and I sat in collapsible lawn chairs beside a crepe myrtle that kept dropping blossoms all over the ground. Cello music swelled out from the house, rising higher and higher until it lifted off the earth, sailing toward Venus. I could see how such music drew the ghosts out of dying people, giving them a ride to the next life. I wish June's music could have seen my mother out. I gazed at the stone wall that edged the backyard. There are pieces of paper in the wall out there, I said, as if August didn't know this. Yes, I know. It's May's wall. She made it herself. May did? I tried to picture her mixing cement, carrying rocks around in her apron. She gets a lot of the stones from the river that runs through the woods back there. She's been working on it 10 years or more. So that's where she got her big muscles. Rock lifting. What are all those scraps of paper stuck in it? Oh, it's a long story, August said. I guess you've noticed. May is special. She sure does get upset easy, I said. That's because May takes in things differently than the rest of us do. August reached over and laid her hand on my arm. See, Lily, when you and I hear about some misery out there, it makes us feel bad for a while, but it doesn't wreck our whole world.
It's like we have a built-in protection around our hearts that keeps the pain from overwhelming us. But May, she doesn't have that. Everything just comes into her, all the suffering out there.